This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Our Matrix server is about as free as internet chat can be. Join the existing rooms or create your own at chat.freetalklive.com.
It's Reigns and Edge on the Free Talk Live Network. I'm Henry Reigns.
And I'm Mark Edge.
And we're here to tell you about the out-of-this-world hearing that happened in Washington, D.C. over the course of the last week. It's worldwide news. It, of course, is the UFO-UAP hearing. Are we alone here? Something out there? And Mark, I mean, this was a global story. It was all over India, Asia, Europe, probably even in Honduras. Who knows where?
Everybody wants to talk about UFOs. What is a UAP? What's that?
Unidentified aerial phenomena.
Okay. Yeah, I suppose that's a more accurate thing because it could be, like, you know, lightning or something like that, I guess.
Yeah, let's just throw over the last five decades of what we're used to talking about, just like we do with so many other expressions. But, you know, it's more than just the hearing. And it's more than the whistleblower that popped up starting doing media interviews over the last couple weeks, maybe 3 or 4 weeks. It's more than just a news story today. It's been ongoing and percolating back to 2017 with the New York Times story. But there's so much. I don't follow it as I should. And I don't know if you're a UFO, UAP aficionado, but we really need someone that can give us the background and lay it all out for us, don't you think?
Well, I've got good news for you. We've had a former guest here on Free Talk Live returning, and, you know, he's the kind of guy that has his finger in every glass. Like, he's taken the temperature around the globe. He knows what's going on.
And he does that all from little old Bradenton in Florida, Manatee County, is editor of the BradentonTimes.com. I think you're talking about Dennis Mitchmaley.
Indeed.
Hello, Dennis.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for being patient with us and making time to be with us. First of all, known Dennis, I don't know, I think it's going back over a decade now. And he is the editor of the BradentonTimes.com, but he's also a published author. Multiple books, historical fiction, I mean, historical and fiction, and always a pleasure to talk to him. Dennis, what's going on with you these days? Because I know your son's out at USC. Just, you know, we don't need a whole personal bio, but what are you up to these days?
I'm spending a lot of time on the sandy beaches now that I have so much more of it since I'm an empty nester.
Oh, that's right. You know, well, you mean Sullivan doesn't want to come see you every break from school?
He had been until he got a girlfriend out there, and now he has an apartment instead of a dorm room. So it was every single break. It's become much more infrequent.
All right. Well, Dennis, I know it was great to have you here because you followed this story. You actually invited me on your podcast to, I guess, more be a sounding board because I certainly wasn't an expert. And I made some observations, but you had the background. What is the timeline, not just of the whistleblower, but when did UFOs and the media interest come into general imagination of the populace?
You know, it's interesting. That 2017 New York Times article was a massive shift in terms of mainstream media portrayal of this phenomenon. And that started what seemed like a slow drip from government sources acknowledging in kind of really coded languages about the idea that there are some, phenomenon that they've experienced and had interactions with through military jets and so forth that are inexplicable. And the term that came out in that article from the government that was extremely rattling to a lot of people was non-human origin. So that term really got people saying, is the government finally acknowledging, because the line all the way going back really to Project Blue Book, is we have no evidence whatsoever of any sort of alien life, alien, you know, spacecraft or anything like that. And that was a massive shift. Now, that had a lot of people, myself included, starting to wonder if this is maybe a little bit of a, would you say, a psyop, in which they're leaking information as potential cover for military technology that's being developed and maybe tested in case there are either public sightings here or maybe even by adversaries, depending where they're doing it. So there wasn't a lot. It seemed controlled enough, this little drip leak, that seemed to be a very real possibility. But then the other one was, if we are experiencing more of these interactions and they're starting to believe that they're not going to be able to keep it adequately secret from the public, then I think you probably would want to have a sort of slow drip of, let's get people comfortable with the maybes about this over time. Because one of the real fears, and I think very warranted, has always been, if people did know about this, and it was released publicly, would there be a massive panic? I mean, in the radio, what was the radio play?
War of the Worlds.
Is always the example that's used. So could the general public handle, you know, that understanding, or would it be a massive freak out? So I think that was where everybody was kind of split until David Grush came out, the whistleblower, and started making some very serious allegations. Again, the big thing here, though, is nothing yet has been firsthand. So we haven't heard from anybody on his end with the information he's giving. However, we had several pilots who gave testimony before Congress talking about their interactions with crafts that, and we're talking, I mean, David Fravor in particular, you know, he's been described by some of his peers as the closest thing we have to an Iceman or a Top Gun in the U.S., you know, recent modern military history, in terms of just being a top notch fighter jet pilot. And someone who's
not the kind of guy that would just necessarily make something up for the lulz.
Oh, correct. Well, he clearly didn't make it up because we have video of it.
Right.
But the idea that he'd have a very, shall we say, credible expert reaction to say, I don't know how this technology could exist given what we do know about, you know, flight technology of our own or our adversaries. So, you know, for someone like that to say, I'm completely befuddled because I can't imagine, it's not like going to stealth bomber or something where it's just an impressive leap to what we've always known. It's something that's clearly using different propulsion mechanisms, most likely from what everybody's saying, anti-gravity, whether they're not using the only real propulsion we've ever known, which is basically you make a big explosion, push it out the back, and it propels you forward. And we've just gotten really, really, really good at how to do that in an extremely powerful way. We've never really, you know, evolved any kind of technology in a, you know, man-craft sort of way that's different than that.
So at this hearing, as you referred to them, we have David Grush, who was the big-time whistleblower. He's gotten legal protection to be a whistleblower. We also have David Fravor. We're going to hear from all these people a little bit later in the show, a former Navy commander, quite a resume there, and Ryan Graves, who's the executive director of Americans for Safe Aerospace and also a pilot. But
who himself has had interactions.
Now, what about, but really we've been hearing a lot of these stories and we're always waiting for the, you know, like show me the money, show me the dead alien, or show me the live alien. We go back into the 60s even with stories like this, don't we?
Let me set the expectations for these hearings. If anybody thinks there's going to be a bombshell in the hearings, other than what we've seen in these recent media reports that these people have all, I mean, David Fravor has been talking publicly for a couple of years now. He was on the Joe Rogan Experience, I think around, God, I think it might have been pre-COVID, talking about the Tic Tac video. So we're not going to get anything from these witnesses beyond what was already out there. What this is for is Congress is hearing it firsthand and in greater depth from them. And what will, if anything, come from this is the will from these committees and then Congress as a whole to demand and possibly even pass legislation to completely unveil, at least to Congress itself, if not to the public, but completely unveil what's known inside the government. It's very clear, you know, I'm a former military officer, and I'll tell you that the one thing that the military is really big on is compartmentalization. So they really believe that the only way to have adequate security is to limit everybody involved in a top secret type classified project to a role and the information within that role only. And a lot of, you know, scientists and technicians and engineers and stuff that have worked in that realm have always lamented that, because science tends to work best if all of the minds are sharing the ideas and bouncing it off of each other so that they could possibly see something that someone else doesn't. The compartmentalization, in fact, there's an interesting thing with the – go ahead.
But no, I want you to continue. I just wanted to get to something about you.
Something very interesting. I went and saw Oppenheimer when it opened, and you see that in their frustrations as well. Because during Manhattan Project, the compartmentalization was the biggest inhibitor of the progress. And you have Oppenheimer arguing, we can't do science this way. We're not going to get to the answer if everybody can only know a little piece of the puzzle. We have to have all these minds seeing every piece on the board.
I think that one of the, although there wasn't a factual bombshell per se that came out as far as having hard evidence, I think what the bombshell was actually hearing these things said in a congressional setting with both Republicans and Democrats as a receptive audience to that. And we're going to start hearing a little bit of what was revealed and told to the representatives. Now, the first stuff we
one more really important point is that this is under oath. So while all those other media appearances were not, so that's another important point to consider. And the witnesses insisted upon that. And there was some among the committee that didn't want to have it done that way, but they very much wanted to make sure it was under oath, and that does make it a little bit different.
And since you brought that up, point, another good point to add to that is that David Grush, the whistleblower that has the legal standing, he's also at risk if he reveals classified information in a public setting to these people. So he's tiptoeing very carefully. This first clip is Congresswoman Nancy Mace from South Carolina. If anybody that was listening to the beginning of the show heard a different clip from her, but this is her in a more professional setting that will come to. She's the Congresswoman from South Carolina, and she pretty much gets him to say all the key points in a very relatively short period of time here. Let's hear what she has to say and what David Grush is going to fill us in on.
Do you believe that officials at the highest levels of our national security apparatus have unlawfully withheld information from Congress and subverted our oversight authority?
There are certain elected leaders that have more information that I'm not sure what they've shared with certain candidate members or et cetera, but certainly I would not be surprised.
Okay. You say that the government is in possession of potentially non-human spacecraft. Based on your experience and extensive conversations with experts, do you believe our government has made contact with intelligence extraterrestrials?
Something I can't discuss in public setting.
I can't ask when you think this occurred. if you believe we have crashed craft, stated earlier, do we have the bodies of the pilots who piloted this craft?
As I've stated publicly already in my news station interview, biologics came with some of these recoveries.
Yeah. Were they, I guess, human or non-human biologics?
This got a lot of headlines around when the non-human biologics. Mm-hmm. But, you know, technically, that could be a mouse that was...
My cat.
Whatever the object was crashed on. But are we supposed to make more of it than that? Or
I think that was very careful language from what you were talking about before. He, in the interview, was a little bit, I forget the exact terminology he used when he was on that, was it the News Nation or whatever, where we did the series of those interviews. And the terminology was a little bit, I think, more revealing. So I think that's a function of him being under oath and it being, you know, the all those things you talked about. He very clearly suggested, now, again, hedging this, he says that he has no first-hand knowledge. He hasn't seen non-human biologics. He has not, you know, understood that from a very personal level, but that it has been relayed to him by other people within the projects that had been part of it.
And we're going to hear it in just a second here. He offers if they can get a skiff. Now, what's a skiff, Dennis? The secure room.
I forget what the acronym stands for, but he does offer that if they're able to put that into place, he will tell them whatever he's able to do.
He'll name names and say where the files are. But we can't put too much of a sinister spin on it because there are a number of skiffs in Congress, these rooms that are secure. Mm-hmm. And they have not, the House Oversight Committee has not been able to secure a secure room to get this testimony in a closed setting. But there's a lot of stuff going on in Congress, so maybe it's a scheduling issue. But I think now that we've had a few days of it being a global story, may find that those rooms are going to open up and be able to be filled with this testimony. Here's where he pretty much says, I'll give you the goods if you just get me in the right room.
Non-human, and that was the assessment of people with direct knowledge on the program I talked to that are currently still on the program.
And was this documentary evidence, video, photos, eyewitness? Like, how would that be determined?
The specific documentation I would have to talk to you and skip about.
Okay. So, and you may or may not be able to answer my last question, and maybe we get into a skiff at the next hearing that we have, but who in the government, either what agency, sub-agency, what contractors, who should be called into the next hearing about UAPs, either in a public setting or even in a private setting? And you probably can't name names, but what agencies or organizations, contractors, et cetera, do we need to call in to get these questions answered, whether it's about funding, what programs are happening, and what's out there?
I can give you a specific cooperative and hostile witness list of specific individuals that were in those.
And how soon can you get that list?
I'm happy to provide that to you after the hearing.
Super. Thank you. And I go back.
Well, there you go. What are we waiting for? Let's hear from them.
Yeah, I have to wonder whether there's maybe some pressure being pushed down from somewhere not to put that in place.
Why? What would be the thought process behind somebody who doesn't want that?
He's alleging that the reason why this is being kept from Congress is because the DOD is working directly with defense contractors who they're allowing to have this information and access to these things in a hope to reverse engineer the technology for military purposes, and that other countries, including China and Russia, are doing the same thing with materials they, according to him, have also collected throughout time.
And I mean, like, that's a foregone conclusion, right? Like, that would be one of the possibilities of what's going on here, and it would be high on my list of things. I mean, you know, I've got all kinds of possibilities bouncing around in my head, but of course, if the military finds, I don't know, an engine that has no friction, they're going to be like, well, how do we make an engine with no friction? They want that, and there's no doubt about it.
This brings us to a really interesting story that's not part of these hearings, but I'd really be remiss if I didn't bring this up. The most credible story on record comes from a man named Bob Lazar. Now, Bob Lazar was an engineer who was an expert in propulsion systems. And in the early 70s, he worked at Los Alamos, which, if you've seen the Oppenheimer movie, I only learned in that it was actually built, constructed in New Mexico for the actual Manhattan Project. Nothing existed there before that. And the military base that's still there, Lazar worked there. He then came out and said he was part of a siloed, highly compartmentalized team that was brought in to look at and study and try to explain a propulsion system from a downed UFO. And he talked about in depth with great detail and an obvious understanding of that kind of engineering what the project he worked on with, and that it was anti-gravity, and that he couldn't explain it because, and he said everybody, you know, was racking their brain on it because it was not according to any, you know, scientific understanding that we had of how propulsion works.
We're speaking with Dennis Mitch Maley. He's the editor of thebrainsoftimes.com, and he has a number of books on Amazon.com that you can just search on his name, and they're all going to pop up for you. We have a little bit more time, but Mark, what are your thoughts before we have to...
Again, I'm wondering this, the secrecy, right? You know, I mean, like... It's not a secret that if the Tri-Coms have a downed a spaceship that they're trying to reverse engineer, or if they've got an alien, they're asking him questions, or whatever it is that they're doing. So, I mean, this doesn't take just. I mean, any third grader can figure this out. There's no reason to keep this from the American people for that reason. We can, you know, somebody could come out and say, "Yep, got us some alien stuff." And we're not going to show it to you because it's a security risk. And that would answer a lot of questions. I mean, like, they create questions through the secrecy, right? Like, I think another possibility that hasn't been tossed out yet is these aliens that are visiting have infiltrated the government and are now ruling us.
Have you been watching Secret Invasion?
It's one of the possibilities, right?
Disney is behind all of this. Just to pump up those Disney Plus numbers, if you ask our governor, he's going to he'll get the goods on him.
From the 80s.
I would say that if there was a form of higher intelligence that could devise that sort of engineering, there is very little evidence that they are running a government.
Well, I think that we seem to keep low expectations as far as that goes. And there's all kinds of other options that are going on, too. And let's talk about some of them here in just a moment.
Hold that thought. We're going to come back with lots more from the hearing and from beyond and just outside our known universe here. You're listening to Reins and Edge on the Free Talk Live Network. More to come.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN team with Youngevity at teamg'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at teamg'day.com and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your Youngevity business. Teamg'day.com. Teamg'day.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
USA News Update. Former President Trump's election case is now moving to the pretrial phase after he pleaded not guilty to felony charges. Lawyers will be filing briefs leading up to the next hearing scheduled August 28th, where a trial date's likely to be scheduled. Reports say emergency rooms in multiple states are scrambling after a cyber attack. The attack appears to have hit facilities mainly in the Northeast. Services are being rerouted, and there are no reports of deaths from the ransomware attack. The 2018 mass shooting at a Parkland, Florida high school schools being reenacted ahead of the civil trial of the school resource officer on duty at the time. Congressman Jared Moskowitz helped lead a school safety roundtable following a tour that was done through the school.
Allowing us the opportunity to get a slight glimpse into what they deal with every single solitary day.
I'm Ryan Daniels, USA News.
Extend your life with Extendo-Vite.
Everyone around me seems to get sick but me. My brother got the flu twice. My mother was down with some sort of fever. People at work were taking sick days off, and others were just plain tired and run down. And me? Well, I just keep feeling great all the time with Extendo-Vite. My grandfather used to talk about the power of garlic and other herbs he took that kept him healthy. I'm lucky. Extendo-Vite was just what I needed to keep me healthy, and Extendo-Vite is all natural. Extendo-Vite was designed for the heart but does so much more by keeping me healthy all the time. I'll take Extendo-Vite forever. Get your 2-month supply for only $69.95 plus shipping and handling. My name is Rick, and you can be like me just by calling 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendo-Vite.
All right, crew, let's get her dug.
Honey, you want to give me a hand? I'm planting that tree, remember?
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. You must call 811 at least 2 to 3 business days before any digging project, so you can avoid hitting our essential buried utilities. This includes natural gas and petroleum pipelines, electric, communication cables, and water and sewer lines. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811. Brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
We still do email. Drop your email address in the entry box at freetalklive.com, and you'll be kept in the loop with Free Talk Live.
Reigns and Edge on Free Talk Live Network right here. I'm Henry Reigns.
And I'm Mark Edge, and we've got with us Dennis Mitch Maley, author, UFO expert, talking about what's going on in Congress right now. He certainly is. He knows more than I do, and I've got lots of crazy questions for you here going on, Dennis. Dennis or Mitch?
Yeah.
Mitch.
Mitch is good.
If you're just joining us, we are covering and getting expert commentary on the whistleblower hearing, or the UFO, or if you really are up to date with your terminology, the unidentified aerial phenomena, the UAPs that was held in Washington starting last week. I believe they're still carrying on, at least into this week they did, and had three main people testifying: David Grush, former U.S. intelligence official who actually worked in the program that was being discussed as far as investigating these different aerial phenomena and what evidence was there. We have David Fravor, a former Navy commander who experienced an encounter with what he called a tic-tac-looking aerial object, but that outperformed anything known to human science. Ryan Graves, Executive Director for Americans for Safe Aerospace. And just if you could bring us back, Dennis, like in about 20 or 30 seconds, where you think we left off and as before we go into some of the other testimony.
Well, I think we're at a place right now where Congress is getting it under oath from the best available witnesses that are willing to come forward. And if this is persuasive enough, what we can hope to expect is either legislatively or through other means to require disclosures either to Congress and the public, or, you know, my inclination would be probably at least first to the committees in Congress.
All right. Well, we had a number of congresspeople that got their chance at Mr. Grush. One, Representative Burleson, was, I would say, a very interested participant in these hearings, and he had much to say with Mr. Grush, and let's see what that brings us up to.
At one point you said that there has been harmful activity or aggressive activity. Has any of the activity been aggressive and hostile in your reports?
So he is asking Grush if any American, whether a contractor or someone in the armed forces, or basically any one of our guys or girls, got injured in the process of this program to identify and explain the UAPs.
And the activity by UAPs or by people within the federal government?
Both.
Okay, so there has been activity by alien or non-human technology and or beings that has caused harm to humans.
I can't get into the specifics in an open environment, but at least the activity that I personally witnessed, and I have to be very careful here, I never to acknowledge tradecraft, right? So what I personally witnessed myself and my wife was very disturbing.
With his wife? How did the wife get involved in all this?
I don't know. I found that very curious when he made that testimony. And I really wish somebody would at least try to press a little bit with that.
Yeah.
Even though, he's being a little evasive with the...
Sounds like it happened at a cornfield in Iowa, doesn't it?
Right.
Like he got it probed or something. Oh, my wife agrees.
Well, I guess somebody should have asked the question. We would have asked the question if we had been there.
I think it's a fair question to ask, but I think that there's also something to think about here. If aliens came here, then they traveled in some manner in super light speed or through some kind of dimensional porthole, wormhole, you pick. Because what they didn't do is take a choo-choo from the Andromeda galaxy to Earth, right? Like, so they took something that was fast or traveled in some way that we're not familiar with. If a being like that wants to hurt us, I suspect they're not going to pull out a Smith & Wesson Anaconda 44 Magnum and point it at somebody.
Well, when you talk about getting injured, though, there's two things to look at. And I'll point, there's another recently released documentary, excellent documentary, on what was little known in America, but a massive event in Brazil in 1991 or 92. The documentary is called Moment of Contact. And there is a plethora of firsthand testimony from people who claim to have seen a down craft with bodies on it, including one that was still alive. And there were little girls that had seen it that are now adults that are interviewed now in the documentary. But the most fascinating part to me was there was a soldier, because the military responded to it, and there was a soldier who got immediately very, very sick. And they talked to doctors who had treated him, and they said he had had an infection all through his body that spread quickly like nothing they'd ever seen, and they threw everything they could at it antibiotic-wise, and it had no effect, and he died. So the question then becomes, we know what happened when European settlers came to North America. Is there a possibility of when you have interplanetary species, obviously, they're going to have germs and diseases and stuff too, and clearly it would, you would suspect that we don't have any sort of immunity or anything to it.
Sounds like a completely fair fear.
Well, as you go through the past, one of the congressmen asked David Grush, how long have we known about these, or what's the earliest incident that has been reported? And the answer was a little bit surprising.
Has the U.S. government become aware of actual evidence of extraterrestrial or unexplained forms of intelligence? And if so, when do you think this first occurred?
I like to use the term non-human. I don't like to move origin. Keeps the aperture open, both scientifically. Certainly, like I've discussed publicly previously, 1930s.
So prior to World War II, there were incidents that were reported to the government, and was that earlier than you had heard before, Dennis?
Yes, except from Bob Lazar, who said that his understanding, rumors, he goes, you know, we weren't supposed to talk to each other, but rumors that, again, not being told by their directors, but other people that were working at Los Alamos with him, he said that the craft they were working on was actually found in an archaeological dig. And he has no idea how old, but it wasn't it wasn't like a Roswell type incident.
So, I mean, when we talk about old scenarios, it kind of brings up to my mind one of the disputes that I have with the UFO thing. I mean, basically, I've read comics for some time, right? And prior to, like, somewhere in the late 60s, early 70s, with Close Encounter, and then there was one movie actually before that, they introduced the concept of the gray. Right, this big-headed, big-eyed alien creature, and pretty much all of the aliens prior to this, the gray thing, was robots, bugs, goops, you know, maybe sea creatures, things like that, tentacled creatures, things that were very non-human looking, but they hadn't really settled on this concept of the gray. And now it's kind of moved on. Now it's shape-shifting lizard people. You know, like there's a variety of things. But it seems like aliens come in fashion. And that makes me skeptical. One thing I've also always been skeptical of is...
What do you mean in fashion? Are you talking about their appearance or their
right.
interest?
Okay. Quite exactly their appearance, right?
Well,
like, why were they bugs in the 30s?
Those depictions in the movies of the grays and stuff are based on the reported sightings, because that's the most common description people had way before the movies. And there's UFO experts, there's a couple of very credible journalists that spent almost their whole career in here. George Knapp was an early one for the 50s and 60s, and Jeremy Corbell, who, you know, they gave thanks to, the committee chairman did, is by far the most knowledgeable and studied on this today, and they said there's essentially three depictions that happen a lot. And we also have to say that if there are beings that have the ability to do that, there may be different species of interplanetary beings as well, but there's a smaller one that are, you know, the little green men phenomenon came out of. There are the grays, which are the large, you know, hairless, large head, small bodies. And then there are the ones they call either the Nords or the something else, where they're very, very tall and much bigger than humans. And there's even been some musings through archaeology with some early art and cave paintings thousands of years old that show these very, very tall beings with what are clearly meant to be the tribesmen. And they're like, oh, they must be gods. The other question is, or were they visited, you know?
Right, I mean, you know, History Channel has made a lot of money on aliens.
Yeah,
no, right. there's no doubt about it.
To the fashion and the images, because, you know, if you think about it, 1930s, we're talking about the reported incident, something that we're still looking at as evidence, or looking for the evidence of it. But as far as imagery, you didn't have movies until after the early 1900s. So people weren't going to see any kind of moving image of any kind of monster. You know, it's hard to believe, but like woodcuts, the woodcuts that were used in newspapers wasn't until Andrew Jackson's presidency. So that's like 200 years ago to get these imageries in people's imagination, to get them, you know, memes of the day. But if you look at the 1930s and the 1920s, that's when the pulp novel became popular. And science fiction in the pulp novel was something that people would see. They'd see the covers on the newsstand. Edgar Rice Burroughs' Tarzan was one of his characters, but he had John Carter's of Mars, and they had other different kind of images like that. When the comic strip of the used to be a whole comic section, not a comics page, in the newspapers of the 20s, and you had Buck Rogers and Flash Gordon. So there was lots of imagery of this. But what we do have at this hearing, if I can turn it back to that, is a couple of individuals who actually recount what they visualized, what they saw, not they visualized, what they saw, and what the visualization of that seems like. This is Ryan Graves. He is the pilot as well as the person that has the advocacy now to get more of this information out to the public. And here's what he said he experienced.
Mr. Graves, again, I'd like to know, how do you know that these were not our aircraft?
Some of the behaviors that we saw in a working area, we would see these objects being at 0.0 Mach, that's zero airspeed, over certain pieces of the ground. So what that means, just like a river, if you throw a bobber in, it's going to float downstream. These objects were staying completely stationary in Category 4 hurricane winds. These same objects would then accelerate to supersonic speeds, 1.1, 1.2 Mach, and they would do so in very erratic and quick behaviors that I don't have an explanation for.
Okay. Have you spoken to commercial and military pilots that have seen these off of our East Coast?
I have.
So he says there's other people he knows that could recount these same images or activities that he has just explained to them. You know, whenever somebody says something with authority and is articulate about it, it seems to carry more weight. I don't know. Maybe he has a motivation to, you know, he's got an organization, he has a motivation to perpetuate these stories. But it does give a little gravity when you listen to him about that. Mark?
Well, my supposition has always been this. This is the stance that I will take, is that I'm absolutely positively sure with the billions and billions of galaxies and the trillions and trillions of stars within those galaxies and the innumerable number of planets that must circle those stars, that absolutely there is intelligent life out there. And it seems statistically likely to me that that some of it is moving along faster. I mean, we've already put things on the moon. So we've been outside the Earth's atmosphere. That some of this stuff, some of these creatures, whatever they are, beings, are able to travel farther and faster than we are. And
why do they want to come here, Mark?
I have yet to get there.
What possible good thing could there be that they want to come here for us?
Well, I mean, we study bugs and plants and all kinds of things. They're curious. That's a possibility. And this is the thing, is that if they were afraid of us and what we would grow into, they'd take care of that right away if they were not friendly. But my supposition is that these things either travel super light speed, which to our understanding is not possible. Now, or they travel through interdimensional wormholes, or they got on some kind of slow spacecraft and came here, in which case, who would do that? Who would spend lifetimes going to just
need to let the herd grow large enough to harvest?
Well, that's, you know, again, and what are you going to do about it?
One of the theories that comes up is that the vast majority of sightings have started to happen after we dropped the bomb, and then a lot of them were near major military bases. So one of the theories is they got interested in this civilization that maybe they knew of from before that was evolving and had maybe gotten to a point where they were dangerous to their own universe and their own galaxy and maybe the universe at large. And they said, okay, we need to start making some more reconnaissance there to see where they're at with this technology.
That's an important milestone in the development of a civilization, is the splitting of the atom. I know that other aliens have atoms, right? I know they got that. And so the splitting of the atom, important milestone. You know, go ahead and study us. But here's what my question is, and this is what my question's always been. If they can travel super light speed, which is an impossible task by our understanding, then, or they can travel through wormholes and these kinds of things, how are we ever going to see them? Like, how would they be you know, traveling in space and time within our atmosphere, how would they crash into something? It just doesn't seem like they're even working on the same plane that we are. So this is why it's always seemed like a bunch of hokum to me. Yes, I believe aliens exist. Yes, I believe they have visited. No, I do not believe that they have ever, like, we've ever seen them. You know, like, it's like ducks in a duck blind. You know, the ducks aren't presupposing there's a guy with a shotgun down there. They're just going around quacking and doing what they're doing.
Well, as authoritative as Ryan Graves sounded, there was one other person there that sounded even more authoritative, more had more gravitas, actually was a commander. That was David Fravor. And this one is just a little bit longer than the other ones we played, but it's so in depth and detail. We'll stop in the middle of it, but he talks about the giant Tic Tac as how best he describes it.
As you know, my name is David Fravor. I'm a retired commander in the United States Navy. In 2004, I was a commanding officer of Strike Fighter Squadron 41, the world famous Black Aces. They're attached to Carrier Air 11 stationed on board USS Nimitz and have begun a 2-month workup cycle off the coast of California. On this day, we were scheduled for a 2v2 air-to-air training with the USS Princeton as our control. When we launched off Nimitz, my wingman was joining up. We were told that the training was going to be suspended and we were going to proceed with real-world tasking. As we proceeded to the west, the air controller was counting down the range to an object that we were unaware of what we were going to see when we arrived. The controller told us that these objects had been observed for over 2 weeks, coming down from over 80,000 feet, rapidly descending to 20,000 feet, hanging out for hours, and then going straight back up, for those who don't realize, above 80,000 feet of space. We arrived at the location at approximately 20,000 feet, the controller called merge plot, which means that our radar blip is now in the same resolution cell as the contact. As we looked around, we noticed that we saw some white water off our right side. It's important to note that the weather on this day was as close to perfect as you could ask for off the coast of San Diego. Clear skies, light winds, calm seas, no white caps from waves. So the white water stood out in a large blue ocean. All four of us, because we were an F-18 officer, we had pilots and window in the back seat, looked down a small, saw a white tic-tac object with a longitudinal axis pointing north-south and moving very abruptly over the water like a ping-pong ball. There were no rotors, no rotor wash, or any sign of visible control surfaces like wings. As we started clockwise towards the object, my wizard and I decided to go down and take a closer look at the other aircraft staying on high cover to observe both us and the Tic Tac. We proceeded around the circle about 90 degrees from the start of our descent, and the object suddenly shifted its longitudinal axis, aligned it with my aircraft, and began to climb. We continued down another 270 degrees nose low, where the Tic Tac, or we consumed 270 degrees. And we point nose low to where the Tic Tac would have been. Our altitude at this point was about 15,000 feet, and the Tic Tac is about 12,000. As we pulled nose onto the object within about a half mile of it, it rapidly accelerated in front of us and disappeared. Our wingmen, roughly 8,000 feet above us, lost contact also.
It's just a little bit more. And he gave all the details about the maneuvering and the distances and the angles and the trajectory and somewhat of the physics and the capabilities of it all. And it leaves you going, wow, man, I'd like to see that. Well, then I think this is the closest thing to a bombshell that you're going to hear in this hearing. Actually, there's video of this, and he tells the assembled crowd about it, and not just video, a little bit more than a video.
We immediately turned back to see where the whitewater was at, and it was gone also. So as you started to turn back towards the east, the controller came up and said, sir, you're not going to believe this, but that thing is at your cap point roughly 60 miles away in less than a minute. You can calculate the speed. We returned to Nimitz. We were taking off our gear. We were talking to one of my crews who was getting ready to launch. We mentioned it to him. And they went out and luckily got the video that you see, that 90-second video. What you don't see is the radar tape that was never released, and we don't know where it's at, of the act of jamming that the object put on an AKG-73 radar. And I can get into modes later if you're interested.
So that was a 90-second video and also a recording of the radar. Here he says it again.
We were taking off our gear. We were talking to one of my crews who was getting ready to launch. We mentioned it to him. And they went out and luckily got the video that you see, that 90-second video. What you don't see is the radar tape that was never released, and we don't know where it's at,
of the act of jamming that the object put on an AKG-73 radar and get into months later.
I'm a little surprised, since it seems like the video was public knowledge, why they didn't play that into the hearing at that time.
It's not very, I've seen the video, and it's not very great camera technology, because they just don't, they're not really well outfitted for that sort of thing in the jets, at least at that time. And it is, whatever's moving is clearly moving with a way that you couldn't imagine a propulsion airplane moving. But the part about them jamming the radars, and then I believe it was him or another person in the squadron also talked about, at one point they disappeared and they were at the rally point. It was like they knew where they were going to go. So it was fascinating technology and inexplicable, by which the highest... So one of the questions you would have is, if we're doing this, if we've created technology that is just top secret and we don't want anybody to know about it, and that's what this is, how would the best pilots in the world not even have a comprehension that it exists? And most of your best physicists, I've heard a couple of physicists say, you know, I know the 5 or 10 people that you'd have in on a project like this, and unless they're really good at keeping secrets and leading a double life, because I know what they're involved in and it's not this, that would be pretty tough to explain as well. So I think we're dealing with alien technology, whether they're manned or unmanned. The other thing we have to think of is objects like that. We're just getting to mastery of drones. We'd have to think that anybody that could travel across the universe would be able to do an unmanned flight in a way that we couldn't conceive of as well. Maybe some of these are remote control and they're looking on a video, you know, in a different galaxy.
We've been speaking with Dennis Mitch Mealy. He's the editor of the BradentonTimes.com.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
You've been hearing Dr. Wallach talking about 90 essential nutrients, keeping the body healthy. GCNteam.com now has Beyond Tangy Tangerine tablets, 60 plant-derived minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, packed in a powerful tablet. But that's not it. 160,000 auric points, a knockout punch to free radicals. Call 877-878-4203 or go to GCNteam.com. That's 877-878-4203.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I started fighting the IRS over 40 years ago when they tried to seize my mother's house. I sued the IRS and won. I beat the IRS then, and I've been beating them ever since. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I've helped thousands of people deal with tax problems they thought might never be solved. I can help you too. If you owe taxes you can't pay, don't wait another day. There's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com, danpilla.com.